I'm not sure how differently the night would have gone if Spencer's phone hadn't started ringing right then. And I'm also not sure how I keep forgetting that he has the only private cellular network on the planet that reliably gets service out here at the gas station. "You guys hear that?" asked Not Donald. We all stood in a weird semicircle around him. And there was no possible way we didn't all hear the ringing noise coming from just behind the supply closet door. O'Brien and Rosa were between Not Donald and the supply closet, with Jerry and me on the opposite side. We had him surrounded, and if only I could somehow telepathically convey to the others that we needed to jump him now, while his guard was down, we might have a shot at incapacitating him while our skin was still intact.
"I don't hear anything,"
blurted Rosa between rings. She was probably the worst liar I had ever witnessed, but now that she had set the narrative, the others decided to commit.
"Yeah, me neither," said Jerry. "Prob's just the wind."
Donald, the demon, pointed at the supply closet and gave Jerry a raised eyebrow.
"You don't hear that? The ringing coming from right behind that door?"
"No," said Jerry.
"Okay, what about you?" he said to the deputy. "Are you going to gaslight too?"
For some reason, O'Brien looked at me. I tried to make a hand gesture to say,
"He's a demon, we need to cut his head off."
I think he just kind of confused the hell out of her. Should never play charades together.
"Yeah, it's nothing,"
she said.
"It's nothing? Why are you people being so weird right now?"
Rosa scoffed and said,
"We're not being weird. You're the one acting weird."
"Okay," he said. A silent moment passed. Then Demon Daniel pointed his flashlight right at O'Brien's eyes. She flinched for just a second, enough time for Demonold to dart past her to the supply closet door.
"Wait!"
I yelled, but it was too late. Demonold opened the door.
"What the hell is going on?"
he asked, pointing the flashlight at Spencer.
O'Brien put up her hands and said, "It's okay. I can explain."
Spencer started shouting,
"Oh my god, please! Please help me! You've gotta save me! These people are maniacs! They beat me and killed my wife! You have to get help!"
Rosa, bad liar. Spencer, freaking amazing liar.
O'Brien yelled, "Close the door!"
He took a step forward.
"Hey!" yelled Demonold. "You stay back! You stay away from me, all of you! Please, untie me! She's not a real cop! They killed people! So many people!"
Spencer started crying. Like, real, actual crying. I couldn't help it. I started slow clapping. Everyone turned their flashlights to me except for Jerry, who was, clapping along.
"You got something to say?"
asked the shapeshifter formerly known as Donald.
"Yeah,
about how we don't turn this into a big, huge farce? How about we all come clean in the spirit of Christmas, okay? You're not really musical icon and famed television and movie star Donald Glover. You're really Sagoth, the shapeshifting demon. Do you have any idea how ridiculous you sound right now?" asked, hopefully, Sagoth.
"Yeah, I do, because I just said it." "These people," sobbed Spencer. "They're crazy. Talking about demons and angels. They're killing people. There's something wrong with them. Please run. Get help."
"Wait. Why was Spencer staying in character? I just told him that this was Sagoth. Why didn't he drop the act?"
"Oh, unless..."
"Sagoth wasn't the one that had beaten him senseless and left him propped up against the door?" I felt a sudden pang of dread. The sensation was spiraling out of control way faster than I could keep up with. O'Brien attempted damage control.
"Everybody calm down. Donald, my name is Deputy Emilio O'Brien."
"You're a deputy?"
"Yeah.
And you think I'm a demon?"
"No, of course not."
"But that guy does." He waved the flashlight at me, then pointed it at Spencer.
"And this guy right here? He's a wanted criminal."
"Okay, so that's why you beat him up and duct taped him to a chair and hit him in a dark closet? Is that something deputies do?"
"Well, no. No, not exactly."
"Well, fuck this! I'm out!" Before she could say anything, Donald? Question mark? Turned and ran out of the back door, letting another cold blast of freezing snow rush into the store before O'Brien raced out after him. The only sound in the room for the next minute was Spencer laughing. No, not laughing. Cackling. When he had finished, he said with a shit-eating grin,
"This is getting fun."
I wanted to run out after them. As stupid as it sounds, if I had been able to run, I would have. They were gone. O'Brien was an adult who made her own decision. All I could do was wait. Time crept by slowly, waiting for her to return. Intrusive mental images of demons flaying my friend did not help. Neither did Spencer's comments.
Hey, Rosa.
She looked up. Shut up, I said.
Let me just ask you one question. What exactly did Jack tell you about me, huh? Did he try to sell you that horse shit about me being some kind of sociopath?
Rosa answered. The exact word he used was psychopath. Spencer laughed again.
Nah, I've never heard anyone before in my entire life. Came back out here for Jack. Worried about him. You know what he is, right? You know, what FFI does to your brain? Shouldn't be out here near other people. No, he needs to be in a hospital where he can't hurt anybody else.
What do you mean, anybody else? I crutch walked over to Spencer and considered hitting him, but then decided against it for two reasons. First, that would have been embarrassingly ineffective. And second, it was obvious that that's what he wanted. He was trying to flip Rosa and prove that I was the bad guy. I don't know why I thought it was a good idea to engage in conversation.
Do you have any idea how annoying it is to live with what you did to my leg? Yeah, I bet it's not half as bad as what you did to the folks you killed. Why don't we ask Kiefer? Or ask about my old boss?
Hey, I didn't kill your old boss. A second passed before he cracked a smile and I realized what I'd done. What about Kiefer? Asked a soft, nervous voice from behind me. Oh, I said, turning to Rosa. Yeah. Well, him either. Yeah, I didn't kill anybody.
Let me ask you a question, Jack.
You know, because you're in such an honest mood right now.
Whatever happened to Carlos?
Huh? I've been sitting here in the dark all night, and I can't shake this weird thought. Am I the only one who wants to know why Carlos isn't here?
I looked at Jerry and said, put him in the cooler. We wheeled the psychopath into the walk-in, double-checked that the duct tape was secure, then closed the door and propped a chair up against the handle. He could scream to his tiny black heart's content in there. It wouldn't bother us. 10 minutes more passed before O'Brien returned to the store.
He got away, she said as she dusted the snow off her jacket.
Jerry shattered a glass beer bottle against the wall and pointed the jagged fragment at her, yelling,
Nice try, demon!
She glared at him and said,
If you come near me with that thing, you better be ready to use it, because either I'm going down or you are.
He's right, I said.
What?
Asked Rosa and O'Brien at the same time. O'Brien was alone out there with Sagoth.
For how long?
We have no idea if you're really you anymore.
Jack... Okay, I think you're confused. Rosa raised her hand and said, Why don't we just ask you something that only the real O'Brien would know?
Yeah, good idea, said Jerry. Is Jack circumcised?
Dude! How the hell would I know that?
She screamed. Jerry looked at me, then back at her, then back at me.
Oh, were you two not...
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I totally misread that whole situation.
Remind me to kick your ass later, she said, taking the words right out of my mouth before pointing her flashlight at the empty supply closet. Where's Spencer?
I explained that he was trying to get into our heads. We had no choice but to put him in there. It was self-defense. Amazingly, she didn't disagree. It took a minute for the situation to calm down, but eventually, Jerry lowered his bottle knife and agreed that we would all just keep an eye on one another until daylight. And backup came. I lit the last of our candles and placed them all around the store, then got O'Brien alone in a corner. Jerry was still eyeballing us pretty hard, so I whispered quietly.
There's something I think you need to see.
What is it?
She whispered back.
I can't say exactly, okay? I need to show you.
Okay. Where is it?
I need Spencer's phone.
Let me guess. It's still on him?
I nodded. In the midst of Spencer's mind games, I forgot to steal his cell phone again. I definitely didn't love the idea of opening the cooler door. Every time I think of Spencer, I convince myself that he's figured out a way to escape, and he's just a few seconds from falling down on me from the ceiling like an evil Spider-Man.
I'll be right back, she said.
I followed as close behind as possible as she went to the cooler and pulled the chair back.
What is she doing?
Asked Jerry in an atypical voice that I would call concerned if it was coming from anyone else. We didn't answer. Instead, O'Brien opened the door, pointed the flashlight at the still smiling Spencer, and walked up to him. I waited until she had put her flashlight on a shelf and reached her hand into Spencer's pocket before I sprung into action, slamming the cooler door shut, pushing the chair back into place. I could hear her muffled scream and slams against the other side of the metal door.
I'm sorry, I whispered.
Dude, what the hell?
I leaned my back against the cooler and looked at the shocked faces of Jerry and Rosa.
Had I made a mistake? If that really is O'Brien, then we'll know in a few hours when help arrives. If it isn't, we've got the demon exactly where we need it.
What demon? Screamed the ever-inquisitive Rosa. When did you start talking angels and demons? I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt, but a person has their limits. All I know is that you've been acting strange all night, and then your friend shot me with a taser in my sleep, and then you come with this guy that you're all fanboying over so hard I expect you to start drinking his bathwater, and then out of nowhere you start saying he's a demon?
Well, when you put it like that, sure. I guess this does look bad.
Where's the gun, huh? You two go outside, and then Jerry loses the gun. How do we know that you didn't take it?
Yeah, yelled Jerry. How do we know that you didn't take it?
I gave him my coldest stare.
I want you to let O'Brien out of the cooler right now, please.
She crossed her arms and started tapping her foot.
I can't do that.
Why not?
She called me Jack.
So?
Yeah, echoed Jerry. So what?
So she never calls me Jack. She calls me Crutches, or Weirdo Boy, or some other slightly insensitive pet name. I've never heard her call me Jack before.
Hmm, said Jerry. He does make a compelling point.
Rosa screamed,
Shut up!
It was too late. Spencer had put the roots of doubt into Rosa's mind, and there was nothing I could say that would get her back on board. Fortunately for me, I didn't have to say anything, because right then the front doors opened and O'Brien walked in.
He got away,
she said as she dusted the snow off her jacket.
Jerry shattered another glass beer bottle against the wall and pointed the jagged fragment at her, yelling, Nice try, demon!
She glared at him and said, If you come near me with that thing, you better be ready to use it, because either I'm going down or you are.
How did you get out? Rosa stammered.
Get out of what?
She asked. Oh, check it out. Jerry said to the room. It's Rosa's first time witnessing something paranormal. Let's see how she reacts. O'Brien put up her hands and said,
What the hell are you talking about? And why is there a chair next to the cooler? And where is the duct tape boy?
Rosa fainted. And as strange as this sounds, probably a good thing that she wasn't conscious for this next part.
Did you ever hear the one about the guy who thought that a fireman was an arsonist? Admittedly, it's not a very good joke, and even if it were, I'm awful at delivery. People usually think I'm trying to be funny when I'm not, and same for the other way around. But at any rate, the punchline is something to the effect of, every time there's a fire, he's there. Feel free to forget the joke if you want to. Not important, just something I was thinking about.
Well, Jerry covered Rosa with a blanket and made every attempt to keep her comfortable while I tried to explain the situation to O'Brien.
Wait, so you're telling me that there's an evil doppelganger inside that cooler?
Yeah.
And how do you know that's what it is?
A magic radio and a monster hunter told us?
No, I just do. I need more to go on than that.
Okay, please, just don't go into the cooler until after help has arrived. You can wait a few more hours, right? I could see the gears turning in her head, and I had to wonder if she thought I was crazy. Or if she was about to rip off our flesh and feed on our suffering.
Surely, if this actually were the shapeshifter, there wouldn't be any better opportunity to start picking us off.
Two of us were locked in the cooler, one of us was unconscious. I'd never been much of a fighter, even with all my limbs. And Jerry was... well... Jerry. Obviously, she didn't kill and eat me, so I was forced to assume that this really was the original O'Brien, and the one in the cooler was the double. But my confidence level, in anything, reality included, had hit zero and started digging a long time ago. A pair of headlights lit up the room, and we both looked outside at the snow truck pulling into the parking lot. I couldn't believe it. The cavalry was early! In my experience, anything can happen at the gas station, but seriously, that never happened! The cavalry was Saul Berthelot, the retired school bus driver and owner-operator of the only snowplow in town. He must have had plans for Christmas because people around here aren't exactly known for finishing ahead of schedule. And especially on the taxpayer dime, but I'd take my miracle where I can get them in these days. Saul pulled up next to Pump 2, honked a couple times, and waved at me. O'Brien stated the obvious.
I think this jagoff wants you to turn on the pump.
Come on, he knows the pumps don't work without electricity, doesn't he? I'm guessing he doesn't. None of us wanted to open the door and go back into the freezing cold. But when the pumps hadn't magically switched on after a few seconds, Saul decided that it would be a good idea to lean on the horn until somebody came out to help him. O'Brien pulled out her car keys and started for the door. "Where are you going?" I asked, stumbling after her and trying my best not to make it sound like I suspected that she might be on her way to kill him and strip him of his flesh. "I was going to help him on his way, if that's all right with you, Jack." I suddenly felt very small. It's bad enough not being able to trust my own eyes, or memories, or mind. It's so much worse not being able to trust my friends.
"Hang on a second," Jerry said before O'Brien pushed the door open. "You just called Jack, Jack."
"Yes, so?" she asked.
Jerry looked at me and waved his hands in the air. "Your entire basis for locking the other O'Brien in the cooler was that she called you Jack."
O'Brien shook her head at me. "I call you Jack all the time. It's your name, dumbass."
"Don't open the door!"
Behind Jerry, Rosa was floating with her eyes rolled back into pupilless white bulges. He looked back at her and casually said,
"Oh, snap! She's floating again."
"It's not safe! Something has found you! It's waiting! Hungry! Outside!"
She slowly started to rise into the air by a few more inches until Jerry grabbed her around the waist.
"I'm gonna have to tie her to a chair or a doorknob or something. Do you remember where Benjamin left all the paracord?"
"There's something on the roof!"
I looked her in the eye area and asked, "Now, is this like a metaphorical something on the roof?"
"You fools! There's something on the roof!"
With that, Rosa pointed out the glass doors up at the covered awning over the gas pumps, and the thing, leaning over the edge, stared down at the snowplow. What followed is actually pretty difficult to describe. See, when I saw it, the three of us had a shared memory, a visceral animal reaction, like a nut punch to the soul. Before that instant, I had seen some things, like truly bizarre things, that many people may have considered horrific. My own exposed bones, a clan of nudist zombies, a snake and spider hybrid. I could keep on with the list of things all day, but my point is, after this, I'm going to have to completely re-examine my concept of horrific. The very image of the creature, which is not even the right word for it, if human language is capable of one, was something that eyes were never meant to see. It forced our minds way past fight or flight into some third option, like my brain simply gave up and shat its pants. We all said it at the same time.
"Fuck! Fuck!"
Rosa fell into Jerry's arms with her eyes closed, and he dropped her onto the ground like a sack of dog food. We were all transfixed at the horrendous beast on the ledge of the pump awning. Its head was the size of a beach ball, shaped more or less like an enormous skull. The eyes were sunken charcoal pockets that didn't appear to move in time or relation with the rest of its body, sort of like balls of smoke. Two nostril slits above an open mouth, filled with disorganized rows of serrated chalk-white teeth like those of a shark, each one about the size of my thumb. It had two spinal horns, both at least a yard in length, and then its shiny black marble in appearance. The thing's clawed hands were tipped in jagged talons, blacker than black, and its skin resembled that of a third-degree burn, pinkish deposits of scar tissue glued upon layers of giant ropey muscle. Even more interesting was that we could see the beast in all of its monstrous glory outlined against the sky, even though there was no light out there other than the ones on the snowplow. Our eyes were picking up a whole new wavelength outside of the normal visual spectrum. It was all coming from this thing.
"Three-way jinx,"
temporarily snapping the rest of us back to reality and all likelihood saving us from losing what left of our minds. O'Brien fell to the ground and started violently barfing.
"Hey!" yelled Saul from inside the truck. "You guys got any gas left or what?"
At first, I didn't want to look back out those doors. I had to. Saul was about to do something that he had no idea would be the single worst mistake of his life. I feel I should tell you maybe just like a little bit more about Saul. When I was still too young to drive, I would have to walk half a mile every morning to my area's school bus pickup spot at 5:30 a.m. My house was close to Saul's hunting camp, where he parked the school bus. So that meant that I was always the first on the bus route. And if I was ever late, he would leave without me. But depending on how hungover he is, he might not start driving until 6:30 or 7, which meant that I would have to stand there in the middle of a dirt field next to the road for up to an hour and a half, at the point of each day when mosquitoes were waking up. After his wife left him, he became much more intolerable drunk, and his kids would show up to school with bruises and broken teeth. He would spend hours at the gas station sometimes, refilling the same cup of coffee over and over, droning on to anyone that would listen to him about what new group of people he had decided was ruining the country. One time, his name came up on the transmission. "There is a man, Saul Berthelot. He cries alone in Deerstand. His blood alcohol content is 0.3110. He owns 42 firearms. His favorite color is purple." I guess my point, if I even have one, is that Saul is a shitty bus driver. And a shitty husband. And father. Shitty customer. Shitty person. But yeah, shitty hunter, too. He was a lot like most people in this town, actually. But even still, I did not want to watch him get his skin ripped off. I got to the front door and pushed them open at the same time Saul was stepping out of his snow truck. I screamed, "Stay inside your vehicle!" Either Saul hadn't heard me, or he decided to ignore it, choosing instead to down the rest of his 40-ounce natty light before tossing it into the snow. "Saul, go back to your truck! There's a gas leak or something!" He was a couple yards from his truck when he looked at me and yelled back, "Fuck you, I need to take a piss!" The creature lurched forward from the edge of the awning, reaching its left arm down with the speed of a mousetrap and snatched Saul into the air by his feet. The beast pulled Saul, dangling upside down, screaming and cursing, close to its mouth. Saul was extremely lucky that he always kept a loaded pistol tucked into his pants. Not because it helped him survive the situation. No, he died. Like, so much dead. But at least the pistol saved him from what could have been a feast of agony for the thing on the awning. Which I had deduced by now was actually the real demon's Sogoth. He popped off a couple of rounds into the demon's face, but the mortal weapon was ineffective as a bee sting, and all it did was piss the demon off enough to slam Saul full force against the concrete pavement below. When he picked the man back up, his broken body dangled lifelessly in the monster's hands. With its other hand, it poked at Saul a few times, then with one of its talons, opened the man up and spilled his blood out into the snow. As far as last words go, "Fuck you, I need to take a piss," are probably not the ones you want on your tombstone. I felt myself being yanked backwards by my shirt collar and tossed onto the floor of the gas station before O'Brien closed and locked the door. "Yeah, nice. Lock the door. Deadbolt will be sure to stop the 20-foot-tall demon creature from coming inside." She pulled me to my feet and said one word. "Weapons." We stayed as far away from the door as possible, while we turned the place inside out, looking for whatever we could use to defend ourselves, but it was seriously slim pickings. Broken glass shards, chair legs, pair of spare crutches, 3 pocket knives. We didn't have what it took to kill the thing outside if it wanted us to. "I can't believe he's dead," lamented O'Brien as she collected a few bottles of our more flammable liquor. "It's like that." "Well," Jerry answered as he duct taped a pocket knife to the edge of a chair leg, "he died doing what he loved. Shooting stuff." O'Brien shook her head in disgust. Jerry caught the gesture and asked, "Oh, I'm sorry. Were you and Rando close?" "Dude," I said, "I know tensions are high because it's Christmas and all, but read the room. A man just died." "So what?" said Jerry defensively. "Somebody dies every 600 milliseconds. We get focus if we have to grieve every single one of them. Are we really going to pretend that any of us are broken up about that red shirt? If we can be perfectly honest for a second, the value of human life out here at the gas station is grossly over-exaggerated, and out of the 6 people inside this building, Rosa is probably the only one of us that hasn't killed anybody." He stared at me and O'Brien, daring us to call him out on that. We all just stood still, trying to think of what to say. But there really wasn't anything to say. For all his faults, Jerry could be very Jerry-ish sometimes, and it's easy for me to forget that when I first met him and he was trying to get me to join a murder cult. "Well," I said finally, "it's only her first day." We allowed ourselves a short, awkward laugh before going back to hunting for weapons. I can't say exactly how much time had passed, but the three of us were ripping open every box in the supply closet when we heard Rosa say, "Hey guys, what happened?" We looked back and saw her standing in the doorway, pointing Saul's revolver at the floor.
"Where'd you get that?" asked O'Brien.
"I saw this thing sitting there on the ground outside. Did you guys know there's a snow truck out there?"
"How did you get it?"
O'Brien asked, even though I think we all knew the answer.
"Just walked outside, I picked it up. Why?"
The annoyance in her voice had ticked up a notch.
"Don't do that again."
"Why not?"
The annoyance in her voice had ticked up a couple more notches.
"Don't worry about it." Jerry jumped in with, You didn't happen to see a terrifyingly huge hell monster while you were out there, did you?"
She squinted at him and said,
"No. Why, did you lose one?"
O'Brien reached out and snatched the gun from her.
"Hey! Sorry, I didn't feel like explaining to everyone why I'm the only one here that should have a gun right now."
"Well, that's fair. I wasn't even mad."
I was, however, mad at the plan that she laid out next. Desperate times call for desperate measures. And there was one resource that we had purposely neglected to tap before now. Whatever was left inside the cooler, we were going to need help fighting the thing outside. And whether I liked it or not,
Spencer was a survivor. O'Brien checked the revolver to see that we had 4 bullets left. That would almost certainly not be enough if we needed it. The deputy opened the door, gun in hand, while the rest of us stood close behind, holding flashlights. Our job was to collectively point them into the eyes of anybody or anything that might try to jump out at us. It came to that. We didn't know what to expect when we opened the door, but the first thing we saw was the empty chair that Spencer had been duct taped to.
"Hello? Is anyone alive in here?"
After a few seconds with no response, she stepped into the cooler, and I immediately regretted going along with his plan.
Spencer flew in from next to the cooler door, hooked an arm around O'Brien's gun hand, and spun her into the wall. The gun clacked to the ground, and we all tried pointing our flashlights at him, but he was just way too friggin' fast. He planted a solid boot into Jerry's solar plexus, sending him crashing into the wall across from the cooler door, snatched a handful of Rosa's hair, yanked her into the cooler with him. Before O'Brien could even stand up, Spencer had Rosa in a chokehold with a pencil that he had used for inventory counts pressed tightly against her neck.
"You guys get bored without me or something?"
he taunted. I kept my flashlight trained on him as he slowly backed into the cooler. The deputy's handcuffs were still around his wrist, but the chain had been snapped, and now it was nothing more than a pair of fancy bracelets.
"Dude?
Listen," I started.
"Shut up!"
he yelled.
"Here's how this is gonna work. First, crack!"
Spencer released Rosa and fell to the ground, his head colliding with the floor and bouncing. Behind him... Spencer, holding the weapon he had just bludgeoned the other Spencer with, the same flashlight that the O'Brien double had taken into the cooler, and I was just starting to realize the same exact flashlight I had given to Donald Glover earlier that night.
"Damn,"
said Spencer, the conscious one.
"Is that what I look like? I'm one sexy motherfucker."
The expression on his face changed once he spotted something in the cooler floor. I followed his eyes to where he was looking and saw it. Saul's revolver.
O'Brien leapt for it at the same time as Spencer, and they both collided before reaching it. They were flying into the shell, O'Brien catching most of the impact, and I dove into the cooler, finding the disgusting sticky ground and feeling around in the dark until my hands felt something cold, a heavy piece of metal. I pointed it at Spencer.
But there was no way I was going to get a clear shot, especially with Rosa's wild flashlight job. Spencer threw O'Brien into the rolling chair, and she flipped over it onto the floor. He wiped a bead of blood from his face and took a step towards me. But that's as far as he made it before another body jumped out of the dark and tackled him from the side. Now here's where things get even more confusing. Pencil Spencer landed on top of Flashlight Spencer, started punching him hard, but not hard enough. In no time, Flashlight Spencer had slammed his flashlight into Pencil Spencer's fist, then flipped him onto his back and started wailing on him. I had my gun aimed right at them both, completely not sure what to do. I looked at O'Brien and said, "I don't know which one's the real Spencer."
"Who fucking cares?" she yelled back. "Shoot them both!"
Flashlight Spencer stopped punching. He and Pencil Spencer both looked at me and said, "Huh?" I hesitated. Pencil Spencer stabbed the pencil into Flashlight Spencer's shoulder and twisted. Flashlight Spencer winced and jumped off him. Right then, Jerry called out from the cooler doorway,
"Hey, butt brain!"
He was holding a lit Molotov cocktail. Not for long. Before I had time to scream,
"Bad idea!"
he had pitched the damn thing at Flashlight Spencer. To caught it in his fucking hand. Here's when I thought things couldn't get any crazier. Pencil Spencer punched the still-burning weapon hard enough to shatter it into a blue fireball that lit up the entire room for just a moment before burning out and leaving us all in the dark trying to catch our breaths. Rosa pointed her flashlight at the figure running out of the cooler. The Spencer ran right through Jerry like he was made out of balloons, then disappeared out the back door. After a couple of seconds, we collectively remembered that there was still a Spencer in the room and pointed our flashlights around to find him. I looked at where he just was, finding nothing but specks of blood and broken shelves. Then I pointed at O'Brien. Then Rosa, who was sitting on the ground, pointing a flashlight at me. Then the other Rosa, who was sitting right next to her, holding an identical flashlight. The Rosas both crawled quickly to the opposite sides of the cooler, and then stared at one another with the exact same look of frozen shock, while O'Brien stood between them and spoke.
All right, here's the deal. One of you is a shapeshifter. That's the one I'm talking to right now. We didn't come in here to hurt you. We came in here because we need your help. There's something outside the gas station that just killed a man.
I watched both of their faces and instantly knew. One looked up at O'Brien and asked in a soft voice, "Somebody died?" The other waited, about a second too late to mimic the look of fear and concern on Rose's face. I walked right over to the shapeshifter and said, "You're busted." She looked at me with a sweet little, "What did I do?" look. But it wasn't fooling me. And then, the look changed into a wry smile, and she chuckled.
"Hi.
What can I do? You got me." "So," I started, "who is Sagoth?" She got to her feet and answered.
I don't doubt you got a ton of questions, but I don't have the time to desire to answer them. This has been a nice distraction. But, if what you say is true, I need to get to work."
"You can't... You could have escaped any time you wanted?" I surmised.
"Well, yeah. But you humans are such curious creatures, and I needed something to do to pass the time until Sagoth showed up. Well, I'll be off. And when you wake up, you won't remember any of this."
The double waved his hands, and Brian, Jerry, and Rosa Prime all fell to the floor unconscious. I looked at each of them, just trying to make sure that they were still breathing, then back at the mimic Rosa in front of me.
"Well, that certainly is strange. But it's time for you to go to sleep."
She waved her hands again. I blinked a couple more times.
"What?"
"I don't sleep," I said back. "I thought I told you that."
"You may have told Rosa, but I can't copy memories, Jack. Just voices and faces."
"Now, who are you?"
I really don't have time for..."
I pointed the revolver at her and squeezed the trigger. "Okay, hold on. I know that sounds bad, but I'm sure you moral absolutists out there are probably thinking to yourselves, I would not have done that if I were in this situation. Well, you know what? You weren't. I was, and I was actually pretty pissed off, not just because the asshole had been screwing with us, using us as bait to lure out the real demon and, like, letting us all go super paranoid on one another this whole time, but also because after all this, after everything I'd been through, that night, he announced that I was going to be the only one to remember any of it. Besides, I had already worked out that a bullet to the chest wasn't going to kill it.
Ah!
It screamed, immediately transforming into O'Brien before my eyes.
Why would you do that? All I wanted to do was help you. But if I had to kill you to get to Sagoth, I will. And you're not...
I shot again, aiming for the center mass like Benjamin always said. The creature immediately transformed into Jerry. It smiled and I shot again. And that's when it turned into someone else. It turned into her. She who shall not be named. The girl... that would haunt my dreams if I was capable of having any. The creature looked at me with her green eyes and asked, "Well, are you going to shoot me again?" I sighed and lowered the gun. What's the point? It changed one last time. And then I was standing in my own presence. And I gotta say, I didn't realize how rough I was starting to look. I desperately needed a haircut. The circles under my eyes had their own shadows. My cheekbones were getting more pronounced, and I was even skinnier than I looked in the mirror. "Jack, I'm going to tell you something I've never told any human before. To me, your kind are a lot like hamsters. I don't feel compelled to explain my actions or motivations to people because you're so primitive and unevolved that you simply couldn't wrap your tiny mind around it." "Okay," I said, "that's fair." "There's no such thing as demons. Sagoth is my responsibility. He sleeps inside of one of the wrinkles in your universe, but something has woken him up. Something I don't know. Every century or so, I have to put him back to sleep, which is why I'm here. Okay, not to hurt you, but to help you. Benjamin, in case you're hearing this right now, you were wrong. Again. Also, fuck you. The legend states, a long time ago, of demons, people saw a shapeshifter every time Sagoth awoke and feasted. Before long, humans confused us.
Oh, I see.
Firefighter. I'm gonna stop Sagoth from destroying your world now, Jack. But before I do, there's one last piece of information I want to leave with you. When I take somebody's form, I don't see memories, but I can feel what's inside them. In a lack of better terms, I'm what you call an empath. Okay? You and your friends here are all kinds of messed up. You'd need an army of psychologists to untangle the mental slinkies inside your mind. Okay, thanks. That's not what I'm trying to say. Your fucked up brains aren't all that special. But the other one, Spencer, I looked inside of him and all I saw was like... nothing. Absolutely nothing. Same as I see when I look at a table or a rock. Just a black void. Yeah, I responded. I actually knew that. I took a step back and let my doppelganger walk out of the cooler. And then right out the front doors. The rest of the night passed on to that incident. The others slept where they fell. But I tried to make them comfortable with blankets and pillows made out of bags of stale bread. While the sun came up, I cleaned. Enough to fill 4 contractor bags. Then I started writing up the inventory loss slip for everything that had been damaged in the fights. It's amazing how productive you can be when you don't sleep. After everything was back in order, I sat in my chair behind the register and read for an hour or so while the others slept off whatever the shapeshifter had done to them. Our first customer walked into the store a little while after that. I didn't bother looking up from my book because I had already posted a sign on the door that said we didn't have any electricity and couldn't sell gas or run cards or accept cash, and nothing worked. I added my own festive touch to the bottom, the drawing of a Christmas tree. The customer walked up to the counter and interrupted my book right when it was finally starting to get interesting.
Excuse me.
You have any band-aids?
I looked up from my book and I saw the man standing there was Spencer fucking Middleton, complete with a pencil still sticking out of his shoulder. I quickly reached for the gun, which I had left on the counter, and realized it wasn't even there anymore. Spencer lifted the revolver and asked,
Was this what you're looking for? Feel a little light. You think you were going to take me out with the first shot?
I slowly dog-eared my page and placed the book on the counter before asking, Is there any way you're actually just a shapeshifter? Spencer shook his head. A minute later, we were back outside in the knee-deep snow behind the gas station. Spencer dug the barrel of the gun into my back and walked me towards the woods. When we got there, he yelled, Stop! He looked around, smelling the air, smiling, and pulled a long knife out of his sheath on his belt.
Yeah, this'll work.
Are you left-handed or right-handed?
Why? I asked.
Never mind.
He grabbed my left hand and sliced my pinky clear off, and then grabbed both of my crutches and yanked them away from me. I hit the thick blanket of snow and hugged my rapidly bleeding hand wound against my stomach. The hot, wet liquid pouring out felt strangely comforting as it warmed my torso.
It's nothing personal. Yeah, I just need some bait. Got a new boss now. He wants me to bag and tag something special. Do me a favor. Keep on bleeding. Won't take long for the thing to catch your scent.
For what it's worth,
this thing doesn't kill you. I'll let you live.
He turned and began to walk away. Hey, Spencer! I yelled after him. You stopped.
Yeah!
You're a dick. He laughed and walked back into the gas station carrying my crutches under his arm. I laid on my back, looking up at the sky and hearing the familiar sound of that gas station door closing, followed by the familiar scraping noise of the deadbolt going into place. If I was going to give survival the old college try, it would have to be now or never. I pushed myself along with my good hand and leg, leaving a sloppy trail of bloody snow behind me. Maneuvering in my condition was going to be difficult, to say the least, and I could sense that my vision was beginning to tunnel, which for me is a particularly bad prospect. If I lose consciousness, well, it means I'm dead.
I managed to pull myself all the way to the side of the gas station before I finally decided that this was a waste of time. I wasn't getting inside, and even if I did, Spencer would just pull me right back out. There was nothing left to do but hope for one more miracle.
Hey, Jack. What are you doing out here?
I looked up to see my old friend Tom, with his white hair perfectly matching the snowy landscape. And Tom was the first deputy that they sent out to babysit us, and the first one to die. I squeezed my bloody nub against my armpit to try and slow the bleeding as I worked out if I was looking at a ghost, a hallucination, or the shapeshifter, and realized that I generally couldn't tell. Spencer's using me for bait? Tom instantly morphed into a 7-foot-tall, 400-pound Samoan covered in scars and tribal tattoos. That limited the options down to hallucination or shapeshifter.
That punk is back!
He barked. Yeah?
Well, I guess I need to teach him a lesson about...
He stopped and turned back to the woods. Something out there was crunching loudly through the forest, snapping through the branches and causing a hell of a lot of noise as it approached. The Samoan figure crouched next to me and whispered,
Sorry. Looks like we don't have time to get out of here. Sagoth has smelled your blood and now he's coming for you.
Oh, that sucks.
Listen to me very closely. There's one thing you need to know about Sagoth. He has one weakness, and that is this. He cannot hurt you if you do not look at him. Do you understand?
No.
Close your eyes. No matter what happens, no matter what you hear, keep your eyes shut until you hear me say the words, Salute him. Till then, he'll do everything he can to trick you into opening your eyes. Once you do that, all bets are off. He'll show with your eyelids. Do you understand?
Still no? Shapeshifter sighed and said,
Close your eyes!
Right then, I saw it. Sagoth. Pushing his way through the forest, he stood as tall as the trees, horrendous and humanoid, with an aura of inconceivable terror and a face that screamed all things dark and hateful. I shut my eyes and instantly felt blessed relief. It's okay, said a sweet, gentle voice. You can look now. It's safe.
He'll do everything he can to trick you to open your eyes.
No, that's okay, I said. From behind me, I heard O'Brien screaming, Jack, help me! I have to do better than that. All at once, I felt them crawling all over me. Insects, they chirped and squeaked as they flooded my pant legs and under my clothes and even into my nose, ears, and mouth. I gagged and swatted at them, but still pressed my eyes shut as hard as I could. A burning heat blasted across my face. I heard the giant being scream from inches away.
Maggot, open your eyes and behold your damnation!
No thanks, I yelled back. And then he brought the big guns. The next thing I knew, I was falling. There was no earth beneath me, only air whipping past my skin as I plummeted down, down, down. It's a good thing I'm still a coward because I think squeezing my eyes shut in a situation like that was actually my natural reaction. And after falling for what felt like ages, I finally landed on a warm ocean. This was about to get really tough. I kicked and screamed at the water around me with no idea which way was up or down. I was certain that I was about to drown, but still, I kept my eyes shut. Eventually, I could feel myself rising. The air left in my lungs was maybe possibly enough to pull me to the surface. I held off for as long as I could until my lungs ached with a pain that was almost as bad as death, and still, I had not broken the surface. This was it. The moment I would finally die. But if I had to go, I wasn't going to give that douchebag demon the satisfaction of knowing that he'd beaten me. I kept my eyes shut, put up two middle fingers, and took a deep breath of water. Which, of course, turned out to be air. And as soon as I inhaled, I was transported back to the snow-covered patch of dirt next to the gas station, completely dry and still freezing to death. The air suddenly reeked of boiled eggs, and a girl's voice said into my ear, Salute him. You can open your eyes, Jack. Sagoth is back where he belongs. I cautiously opened one eyelid and looked at the amazingly beautiful woman standing beside me and asked her, So, he's gone? For now. It's interesting. Most people crack at spiders and look, but you got all the way to the ocean. I don't expect this to mean much to you, but I'm actually impressed. A metal pole erupted from out of the center of her chest. She fell to her knees and coughed up copious amounts of blood. She looked down at the thing with a bewildered expression and fell over onto her side. The pole was thin like an arrow, covered in serrated hooks, and once she hit the ground, I could see that it was actually a spear. The other end of it protruded from her back with a black cord connected to it running all the way across the yard to the feet of Spencer Middleton.
He dropped the harpoon gun and whistled to himself as he walked the distance to where the shapeshifter was still gagging, still twitching, and grabbing onto the pole that impaled her. As he came closer, she started changing from one form to another, a giant bodybuilder, an Olympic-style wrestler, a morbidly obese man, a child, Jerry, O'Brien, me, Spencer, and then it started switching faster and faster, 10 different people each second, all of them holding onto the spear and bleeding out into the snow. It went through 100 of them before finally stopping and settling on that of a frail old Asian woman. Tiny and wrinkled, more white hair than black. Huddled in a fetal position, his tears rolled down the side of her nose into the snow. Something told me that if the shapeshifter had a true form, I was looking at it.
"Struggle all you want," Spencer said to her. "This spear is tungsten. You can't pull it out or break it. I own you, and in a minute, dead or alive, I'm going to sell you."
He grabbed her around the neck and dragged her away. All I could do was watch them go. She connected eyes with me until Spencer had dragged her around the side of the gas station. And then, that was it. I was alone. I couldn't move anymore. Even breathing was beginning to become a near impossible task. I thought about how strange this was going to look to Jerry, or O'Brien, or whoever was going to be unlucky enough to find me out here, clutching my four-fingered hand under my armpit and staring into the forest. The blood in the snow was already being erased under a slow flurry of snowflakes. And after an hour or less, it would look like none of this had ever happened. People knew I had mental issues, so this wouldn't even be front-page news. The only curiosity will be, I wonder what happened to his finger. Oh well. There are certainly worse ways to go, especially in a world with monsters like Sagoth and Spencer. I watched the snowflakes fall and focused all my effort on the labor of drawing in one last breath. Then one more. And then one more after that. It might be pointless, but I'm going to get my last few seconds. And then the back door opened, and somebody came over to my side, grabbed me by the shirt collar, and started dragging me. He dragged me through the back hall, and instantly I felt the blood rushing through my veins all over again. He took me all the way to the front of the store and dropped me onto my back before crouching down next to me and smiling.
"I told you I'd let you live if I caught what I wanted. And a deal's a deal, right?"
I took a deep breath of warm air and tried to find the right words to tell Spencer just how much I hated him, but I couldn't. He didn't seem to need me to anyway.
"You know, Jack, maybe things aren't meant to change. Maybe things are the way they are for a reason. I mean, it's been up and down for both of us. We've both lost so many friends here at the gas station. Kiefer, Carlos, Tom, that Hunter asshole from this morning. But at the end of the day, only two things are constant. You and me. You're like that shitty Batman to my awesome Joker, and don't worry about the shapeshifter. Just handed her over to my new boss. So, she won't be bothering you anymore."
He stared out the doors at something. Something I couldn't see. Smiled big, smug, self-satisfied. "Yeah, you're right. Some things never change. How you never remember that I can pick your pockets." "Hey, Spencer?" I said as soon as my voice had come back to me.
"Yeah?"
he said. "I'm right-handed." I stuck the tip of the revolver into his stomach and pulled the trigger. The look on his face was that of...
I cannot believe that shit just happened.
He fell onto his ass and looked at the gun in my hand. And then the rapidly growing circle of blood on his shirt.
"You little piece of shit."
O'Brien finally fuckingly woke up and ran out of the cooler into the front room yelling, "What was that noise? Jack, are you okay?" Spencer grabbed his stomach and bolted out the front door. I tried to yell to O'Brien to go after him, but I had lost the ability to talk again, and instead, I just closed my eyes and waited. But I got to ride in an ambulance, which is pretty cool. I also got to take Christmas Day off of work, which is about the closest thing to a Christmas miracle I can get, so I'll take it. The others all came and visited me at the hospital in shifts. No, I mean, somebody had to stay and watch the gas station. And I even got to eat, like, 10 packs of chocolate pudding.
There's a nurse here that I suspect has a thing for me because she keeps sneaking me extra desserts.
Once again, the official report is that nothing supernatural happened. Saul's disappearance, my beating, and the damage to the gas station and all the blood were blamed on Spencer. The others have absolutely no recollection of the night, and I'm left with no proof besides my notoriously shaky memory, which is why I decided to write it all down before I forgot anything. All in all, it wasn't the worst Christmas I've ever had. On Christmas Day, the nurse brought me a neatly gift-wrapped box. I asked who it was from. She just smiled and said somebody special had dropped it off for me. I unwrapped and opened it to find another, smaller box. I unwrapped that one and found another box. And inside that box, another smaller box. And the last one was small enough to fit inside the palm of my hand. Someone had gone through a lot of trouble for this, and I was starting to get a very uneasy feeling. Finally opened that last box, and it confirmed my suspicion. Inside the last box were two things. A small paper note, and my severed finger. The note only had three words written on it, in a dried brown ink. Merry Christmas, Jack.